This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Many thanks to Grace Rayner from The Athletic, who joined us in hour number one. Our two-a-days continue today. Clemson and Miami football. Obviously, NC State baseball is a humongous topic. The Hoos go tonight to try to get the ACC with a pair of 2-0s in Omaha. And the NC2A back in the headlines again. Another horrific loss for Mark Emmert, Wes. And we've got just the guy to kind of break down in layman's terms for the rest of us to kind of understand the significance of the decision yesterday by the Supreme Court.
Appreciate Dan Murphy of ESPN.com squeezing us into his schedule, because yesterday he became wildly popular again. Your calendar was already full. But the score was 9-0 yesterday at Capitol Hill. The Supreme Court basically sends the NCAA to the showers on this one. Dan, give us the layman's breakdown of what all this means in your mind.
So for the last 35, 40 years, since the last time the Supreme Court ruled against the NCAA, the NCAA has used one argument to defend the way that they run their business and the way that they cap the amount of money that schools are allowed to give their athletes. And today, or yesterday's case rather, was so significant because that argument basically got wiped off the slate. They can no longer use it. And that's been their strong defense for 35 years that's allowed them to avoid antitrust lawsuits and litigation by saying that they deserve some type of special consideration, that they're not a normal industry or business because they're education focused. And the Supreme Court came back yesterday and basically said, yeah, we're no longer buying that. This is an entertainment industry and you have to start behaving more like a regular business. So yesterday wasn't a humongous blow in terms of what changes immediately, but it opens the door for, you know, the knockout punch potentially.
And so if you're Mark Emmert today, Dan, what's the dog and pony today with Mark Emmert, given what happened yesterday?
So the NCAA and Emmert came out yesterday and said, well, this maybe isn't quite so bad. And in the near term, he's not wrong, right? What this decision does is immediately allows players to get more academic-related benefits. They can get laptops from their schools. The schools can pay for them to go study abroad. They can even give them some cash rewards now for getting good grades. That's not the end of the world. But almost immediately after that, right, as new name, image, and likeness rules start to come in place and the NCAA continues to try to change its sort of definition of what amateurism means, all of a sudden they can't put any blanket restrictions on more or less anything anymore, or else they face right. The constant threat of being back in court. And based on the precedent the Supreme Court laid down yesterday, they're going to have a very uphill battle in any future lawsuits that they face.
Dan, one of the things that struck me yesterday in kind of reading some of the opinions that have been formed by, you know, other people in sports and legal background folks like yourself is this. The NCAA's kind of trapped themselves here. They hedged their bets on going to Washington and the Supreme Court ruling in their favor. Now they're kind of left with really bad cards to play. They're still alive at the table, but they don't have a lot of wager room left. I mean, it's going to be really, really hard for this organization to recover. The athletic directors, principally at the major level, have been trying to get the government to step in on name, image, and likeness. Do you now see that happening as a result of yesterday in some way?
So I can still see Congress stepping in at some point and creating a federal rule that makes one sort of national standard for what college athletes are allowed to make on their name, image, and likeness in the future. I don't think that's happening quickly. I think it'll be at least several months before we see any movement on that based on some of the recent discussions that have been going on in Congress. But as you say, in the past 6 months to a year, as the NCAA has really faced maybe the toughest challenge to date in their 115-year history to this core fundamental tenet of their business, right, that athletes can't be paid and still be college athletes at the same time, they've gone a lot of places looking for help, right? They've gone to state legislators asking them to back off. They've gone to Congress saying, we need your help. They've gone to the Supreme Court with, as you mentioned, a potentially pretty dicey, risky move to try to ask the Supreme Court's help. And they haven't found it anywhere. What they're finding is that people are no longer agreeing with the general college athletics view of itself, that this is in fact an entertainment business that makes billions of dollars a year. And this idea that we're more about education first is just not landing well with anybody they're asking for help.
Dan, can you remember the last time the NCAA actually won a case?
Well, they've won partial victories actually in several cases, things with like transfer rules and stuff like that that have been challenged. And that's part of the reason why this landed is in the Supreme Court, is that different judges have interpreted that, you know, we talked about the NCAA's sort of argument that they've been making for 35 or 40 years now. And some judges have bought that and said, yeah, they do deserve special consideration. This is education first. And that's actually based on something the Supreme Court said back in the early 1980s in a Regents versus the NCAA case that a lot of people cite frequently when we talk about this stuff. But because of that inconsistency, the Supreme Court decided to weigh in, and it's now much more definitive that the NCAA is going to have a hard time in the future.
So how fast does the track change in your mind based on the ruling yesterday? Jim Phillips was obviously quoted yesterday talking about we'll continue to look at the court's decision, do what's best in the interest of the student-athlete, which is exactly what the other Power Five commissioners are going to say. It's really probably what anybody would say. But that being said, how fast do you think the landscape moves now?
So there's a short-term effect and a long-term effect, right? In the short term, this will immediately impact the way that the NCAA wants to regulate name, image, and likeness stuff. They're having a meeting this morning and tomorrow to talk about that, and they'll probably make a decision on it sometime early next week. And the court's ruling will impact how hands-on the NCAA wants to be with the new rules and restrictions it's going to place on college athletes and what they can do with their name, image, and likeness. In the long term, in terms of really sort of blowing up the whole thing, if it comes to that, and again, there's no guarantee that it comes to that. Not every judge is going to agree with what Justice Kavanaugh wrote in his opinion yesterday. But if it comes to that, this stuff moves very slowly, right? The Alston case, the one we're talking about today, started back in 2014 or 2015. That guy's almost in his 30s at this point. So the court system moves very slowly, but the next challenges to the NCAA are already in the pipeline, right? So we're looking at a couple of years down the line, most likely before any future decision that could potentially remove all restrictions on what schools could give their athletes could be coming to a head.
Dan, I read a couple reports yesterday that not only did the NCAA lose the case based on the Supreme Court ruling, it also cost them nearly $280 million. I mean, I don't care who you are individually or how big your company is, $280 million is a ton of cash. And this is a group that's running college athletics, right? I mean, at some point in time, do we not take a step back and go, hey, what are we doing here? What's going on?
Yeah, the legal fees for the NCAA have quadrupled in the past few years based on this constant threat of lawsuits. And frankly, that's part of the reason why they appealed to the Supreme Court and took this sort of legally risky maneuver, is that they were trying to stop the dam, right? So it was either like, you know, ripping off the Band-Aid a little bit. Let's make a decision and learn one way or the other. And I think, unfortunately, if you're Mark Emmert, you just open the door for a lot more lawsuits. So I don't think those legal fees are going down anytime soon, right, unless they decide to no longer fight those battles. But yeah, that's a quarter of $1 billion that, you know, all of these schools say, oh, there's no way we can possibly afford to pay players or give them a bigger cut. But there's a quarter of $1 billion you just lit on fire to get no decision that you want.
Yeah, to lose. I mean, that's the other thing. It'd be one thing to say, listen, hey, we're the Dodgers. We're going to go spend $300 million and maybe luck into one. Right. But when you lose and spend that kind of money, hey, all right, everybody, let's say we threw a great party. Unfortunately, it's over. Let's everybody divvy up. I mean, that doesn't work. I mean, that doesn't work. And that's a problem. That's a lack of leadership is what that is.
Well, yeah, think about it this way. There's, what, 400,000 college athletes. If you split that $250 million up among them, I can't do the math quite that fast in my head, but that's a decent salary for every single one of them if you spend that money a little bit differently paying athletes instead of paying lawyers.
Yeah. Amen.
All right, Dan, here's the last thing from me. Big picture. Have we seen the end of the NCAA? Are we starting to see the end of the NCAA, in particular maybe Mark Emmert's administration of it?
Those are probably two different questions. Whether Emmert has run out of string will be an interesting one. He just got a contract extension a few months ago, and I know that ruffled a lot of feathers among athletic directors and people wondering, you know, if he, you know, has, they have not taken a proactive approach to any of this stuff in the past 10 years when it's really come to a head. And that's been the length of Mark Emmert's tenure. So we'll see. I've talked to a lot of people to try to decide how much Mark Emmert really has to take credit or blame for that stuff, and how much he just happens to be the guy in the seat when all this stuff is really coming to a head. But in terms of the future of the NCAA, amateurism is not going away tomorrow. Like, there's still going to be football games in the fall. This is still going to look very similar to fans who are trying to root on their teams. But I do think all of the turmoil, all of the change, and this court case is a big hammer on top of that pile, is going to lead to some tough decisions, right? Where schools are going to have to, for a long time, most schools in the NCAA have been able to keep one foot in two different lanes, right? We're an education-based, you know, athletic endeavor, and we're an entertainment industry that makes billions of dollars a year. I think it's going to become increasingly hard over the next few years to keep a foot in both of those lanes. They're going to have to choose one direction and go with it.
I think that's 100%
right. I can't remember specifically who wrote this. I think it might have been Mike DeCourcy. It would have been a hell of a lot easier just to find a way to settle the O'Bannon case, wouldn't it? I mean, it would have been a heck of a lot easier.
There were a lot of off-ramps, right? They could have changed their own name, image, and likeness rules of their own accord, you know, at any point in the last 10 years. They could have been quicker and have to be forced less to the table to provide medical benefits or extended educational benefits. All these things that are in front of Congress right now, had the NCAA been more proactive, they might have been able to fend off a lot of the athlete right advocates for at least a little bit longer. I don't know if it saves them from this trouble eventually, but I don't know if they'd be facing this situation now where it's all coming to a head all at once if they had been a bit more proactive.
100% right.
Dan, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for your time. Know you're swamped and covered up, and appreciate you working us in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you guys.
You bet. All right. Dan Murphy writes about this for ESPN.com, visits with us fairly regularly here on Packer and Durham as it relates to all these issues with name, image, and likeness, and now the Supreme Court ruling in the Austin case, which basically says that the NCAA cannot handcuff student athletes from benefits related to their education. I mean, Pack, I don't know what more you can say. There's going to be a caste system created within the membership, Power Five, Group of Five, whatever, in Division One, on down through Division Two, Division Three here. I mean, there's just no getting around that now if that's going to be the case.
Mark Emmert once again proves he is the $3 million pinata. That's what he is. Mark Emmert is a $3 million pinata. That's the only way I can describe what's going on here. He's getting paid a lot of money, and everybody's got a big stick, and they're knocking the living daylights out of him. He just sits there and takes it. Point, point, point. That's what he is.
Yeah. You've talked about the volatility of the college landscape
for years.
Yesterday was an earthquake, wasn't it?
Oh, it's the start of, I think, what's a bad news bears for the NCAA. I really do. I said it to you last hour. CSA. Let's get the really smart, talented people in college athletics and create the common sense approach, and we need it desperately because we are going down a bad path with this. Because when you, and I say it all the time, when you are weak at the top, you are bound to fail. I don't care what kind of business you run, and the NCAA is a absolute perfect snapshot of what I'm talking about.
All right, sit tight. When we come back, we'll ride to Omaha. Jeff Gravely is on the scene, has been following the Wolfpack and their efforts, including Terrell Tatum's launch into the night last night and a Wolfpack victory, 1-0 over Vanderbilt to move them ahead into the winner's bracket. Stay tuned. Gravely's next from Omaha on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. You know, we haven't been to Omaha yet. We've talked about Omaha.
No.
We haven't gone there yet, but we're going to do it multiple times in this show. And we're going to, this is the first installment of Heading to Omaha. And we bring on, making his debut on the program, A TV.
How in the world is this happening?
I'm not sure. The guy's a television executive. He's been on television for 100 years. He's at GoPack.com. I'm disappointed in him, though, because I told him he was talking about what he should wear today for his debut. I said, dude, just put on a hat, a sweatshirt, and make sure you got a little whiskey steak still on your chin from last night's meal. Nah, I can tell better. Lost, too. Wrong answer.
No.
Jeff Gravely joins us.
I had to go polo, and I haven't gotten to the steak yet for breakfast. I haven't done that yet.
What's wrong with you, man? You're in Omaha.
I know.
Surely the Drover's exactly right. open for breakfast.
I got to get Elliot Avens' credit card before I go to Drover, though.
Oh, no, no.
Can't do that yet.
Drover's awesome. Yeah.
You haven't been. Hold on. You've been there since Wednesday, and you haven't been to the Drover yet?
Big mistake.
No, the team went on the first day we were here on Wednesday. I didn't make that trip, so I got it on the list. Now that the fellows have given us an opportunity not to play until Friday, I have more opportunity to try to get to the Big D.
The fact that you've been there for nearly a week, that is E5 on you. That's an E5 not to be in the Drover yet.
That's an E5.
After 6 days, hey, man. Come on.
I'll take all the E's as long as the team doesn't have any like last night. That'll be fine.
There you go. You take the E's if the team's giving you the W's. And how great was that baseball game last night? For old school baseball lovers, both pitchers were awesome. Both, you know, bullpen, the whole routine. They put on a show. And it was just like, can anybody make contact? And for NC State, Jeff, all you needed was one, and you got it.
First hit, first run from Terrell Tatum, a guy who had been struggling for a little bit. As a matter of fact, I was doing a video for Father's Day, and Terrell was a part of it. And I was talking about playing the outfield. He said, man, I'm not here to play the outfield. I came here to hit. And boy, did he do it last night with the epic bat flip and everything. And just the excitement he had rounding the bases. You knew last night there weren't going to be a lot of runs if you're NC State. And I think that's why it was so beneficial and so incredible, the performance of Sam Heifel on the mound. The guy knew he couldn't go out there and put up a snowman, and he didn't. And Terrell Tatum came through. It's been Johnny Butler in the first game. It's Terrell Tatum at the offense today. But I think the difference in game, the first game here and the second game last night was no errors for the Wolfpack. It's something Elliot Avent said they had to improve on from game one to game two here in Omaha.
Jeff, you're in an interesting spot here because being kind of with the team here, you're getting more access maybe than traditional media just by nature of the protocols with the College World Series and the NCAA events, and everybody kind of understands that. I sense that the team had its own momentum when it arrived, and now they've built more momentum in these first two games, especially after last night.
They've gone momentum from Ruston, Louisiana, to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and brought it right here to Omaha. You're exactly right. And, you know, even after the game last night, you saw some celebration, some excitement. And then it was, okay, we got another game to play on Friday. And even when they got back here to the hotel, and I'm telling you, the lobby was packed with State fans ready to welcome the boys back to the hotel. And it was loud and it was boisterous. But as soon as they turned that corner to come get their post-game meal, it was business as usual. And I think that's something – I think it shows the maturity of this team. If you look at the field, it's a very veteran team. If you look on the mound, other than Reed Johnston – and Evan Justice, it's a very, very young team on the mound. So they have a great blend of experience in the field, youth and talent on the mound, and a really great mindset that I think is a part of Elliot Avent. I think one of the great things that Elliot said after 21-2 in Arkansas, he says, hey, guys, we came here to Arkansas to win two games to go to Omaha. We still have two games to play. That set a mindset for this team. Hey, we're not done yet. We still have some things to do. And since that 21-2 game, boy, have they responded. In the last four games, two hits, eight hits, four hits, four hits. That's all NC State has surrendered as a pitching staff. That's pretty stout.
Jeff, I've always found on my visits to Omaha, as the tournament goes on, the city who does a great job making these guys feel like rock stars, but the city will end up picking and choosing. That I'm talking about the locals that don't have an association, whether it be NC State, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Virginia, whatever. But as the tournament goes on, there always seems to be a darling that the city embraces. Do you get a sense that NC State is becoming that team in Omaha?
I think as soon as they got here, they were that team because they were the team that beat number one Arkansas. There were a lot of SEC fans here. They were like, oh, that's the team that beat Arkansas. Those are the guys. Oh, okay. And then even from other schools, like I had a guy from Texas come up to me last night during the game, say, hey, good luck to you guys. You know, it's pretty interesting, but you're right. The Omaha people will adopt a team if they don't have anybody here that they have an allegiance to. And I certainly believe that they've adopted NC State because as that game moved on down the road and the pressure started to build and there were no hits, no runs, all of a sudden it's 1-0. You could sense the momentum and the crowd was certainly with NC State. And State brought a really good crowd base as well, including basketball, women's basketball coach Wes Moore, who was on the Jumbotron early in the game, leading the Wolf Pack cheer. He did a phenomenal job to get everybody riled up. Surprise there, right?
Well, yeah. Well, here's I was going to ask you about this because I know after Saturday's game you visited with Elliot, David Thompson's there, Wes Moore was there. Dave Doran told us last week he was going to try and get there for the Monday game, so I'm guessing he got there at some point. How all the community of the Wolfpack themselves, the coaches and former – how many former baseball players are there? Because Elliot told us last week his ops guy was trying to find tickets for people.
You got that right, and there are a lot of former players here, whether you were a star player. Now, we haven't seen Carlos Rodon and Trey Turner. I think they're a little busy right now. But guys who are not involved in baseball are here. Even some travel from foreign countries. And, you know, former women's basketball players are here, a lot of the Wolfpack Nation. But when you sit there and you go down to section whatever, 105 it was, and you see DT sitting in the stands, and then two rows ahead of him is Derek Wittenberg, you got 74 and 83 represented at a college baseball game in Omaha. And I think that speaks volumes. And I think having this time period now as we build up to Friday's game, I think you're going to start to see more and more Wolfpackers show up, including some of the coaches, if they can get here. I know Coach Doran would love nothing more than to be here for the whole thing, not just for baseball, as you know, stakes.
Yeah.
Amen to that. That sounds pretty good right about now, to be honest with you. Jeff, and it's been well documented. We had Elliot on last week before we made the road trip. You know, he's gone through some personal losses in his life here recently, including his dad. We just had an amazing Father's Day Sunday from a Virginia perspective in terms of the Logan Michaels home run and his dad in the stands. You know, and not to get too crazy here, but sometimes, you know, a higher being, you kind of wonder sometimes if there's not magical runs. The time is right. Do you get a sense of that at all with Elliot and this team?
He will deflect all of that, and you guys know him so well, and you know that he will. But I think not just – I think his players would love more than to be the team that would give Elliot Avent his first national championship. I can't imagine what the scene would be like. These players absolutely love him, absolutely love him. His current players, his former players, and I think that's something that's unique. And I think quietly in the baseball world, the college baseball world, there are a lot of coaches pulling for Elliot Avent to reach this career feat that he's not reached so far. So there are a lot of people pulling for him. He's always deflected. It's about the players. It's about the players. And absolutely it is. That's the way he has built his program. And the players feel that love. But they also give it back to him in ways that we've seen here in the postseason and even during this run after they were 1-8 in the ACC. This team could have splintered and gone in all different directions. Instead, they united, and here we are in Omaha with a 2-0 record. That's pretty special. And I know nothing more rewarding than for Coach Avent to watch his team play the way he did. And I did. I got to spend some time with him the day before Father's Day after their first win. And I had to ask him about his dad because I knew he was thinking about it. I said, hey, I know your dad isn't here, but he's up there smiling that his son is 1-0 in Omaha. And he got this look on his face. He said, yeah, just wish he was able to watch these games from his rocking chair like he used to. But, you know, it's an incredible perspective that he has carrying with him. It's something that baseball has given him an outlet from the pain that he suffered over the last 2 years. And I think the sport has and his players have, and that's something that Elliot Avent can covet, is the fact that he's got so much support from so many people.
Yeah, good point. Jeff, you were there 8 years ago when both NC State and Carolina were in Omaha. The similarity, you mentioned Rodon and Turner, Are there any similarities? What are the big differences, you think, in what you saw 8 years ago and what you're seeing with this particular NC State team?
Well, you just mentioned Rodon. I mean, the fact that when he came here in 2013, I mean, he was the guy. He was the lighter, the rocker. He was the guy that everybody looked at and says, there is your first-round draft pick. I don't know that NC State has that right now, but what they do have are basically five pitchers, and that's what they're dealing with right now. Three starters and Reed Johnston and then Sam Highfield from Apex High School, right, Wes? I know you're on the 1B list now with the performance that Sam did.
I am on 1B. I'm 1D. 1D, that's it. Pax got the A, that's right. That's it. Repping Cougars. All right.
And then Matt Willardson. So you've got three guys from North Carolina that are starting in your rotation. And then you develop Chris Villeman into a reliever. And you don't forget, guys, Evan Justice started the year as a starting pitcher and didn't pick up his first save until April against Boston College, and now he's racked up 13. So they've kind of figured things out on the fly, so to speak, and it's worked so far.
Can you imagine if Virginia takes care of business tonight? You're going to have the two unseeded teams in the field of eight sitting there at 2-0, both from the ACC. It'd be an amazing story.
It really would, and, you know, I think that's something that it would be great for the league. It would be great. You know, those two teams couldn't play in the regular season, and it would be interesting to see if they got a chance to play here in Omaha. I know there was a weekend that State had an open, and Virginia did too, and Coach Avent and Coach Connor were trying to figure out a way that they could play each other, and it just didn't work out. So why not have them play here in Omaha for a national championship?
Last thing here, Jeff, real quick. They don't play again until Friday, as you said. Any concerns about momentum here and stopping this express for 3 days?
I don't think so. I think this team is mature enough not to allow that to happen. I think they'll be loose enough to kind of carry the momentum. I think they needed a day or two to kind of decompress a little bit. They've been on this train since 21-2 in Arkansas, where they've just been grinding and grinding and kind of been in an elimination mode, so to speak. So I think they'll be welcome to have a little downtime. They are scheduled to practice today. I'm sure they will tomorrow. And then figure out what they want to do on the mound on Friday. And depending upon who they play, do they want to throw Reed Johnston out there again against Stanford, or do they want to, you know, go with Matt Willardson, who we haven't seen yet here in the College World Series? And we've also not seen Chris Villeman from the bullpen. So it's been a three-man show here in Omaha as far as the mound's concerned. So I think it's I think what we saw last night from Sam Highfield, the fact that, yes, he's listed as a freshman but did pitch some last year. I think it was 14 innings he pitched last year. But the composure that he had, I think, just goes throughout the team. And I think they'll be fine on Friday with the opportunity to possibly get an opportunity to clinch a spot in the championship series. That'd be pretty awesome.
What you need, if you're NC State, you need Vanderbilt and Stanford to play an epic 23-inning affair. Just one of the all-time great games.
No question.
Empty it out.
Use them all. Use them all.
That's what you need.
Yep, we'll kick back and eat steaks.
That's it. There's the attitude we're looking for. I love it.
Jeff Gravely, live from Omaha. Thank you, son. Appreciate your good work out there.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me.
All right. You can read, you can see Jeff's work at gopack.com. Sit tight. When we come back, in case you missed it from yesterday, Virginia skipper Brian O'Connor with us ahead of his team's game tonight against Mississippi State. The emotions of the Father's Day victory over Tennessee, and how do the Cavaliers process this trip in relation to others? Next, in case you missed it on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, Tuesday show continues. That will not be our last visit to Omaha this morning. Appreciate Jeff Gravely taking care of business. But we got a little Kelsey Riggs action. And Sam Highfield, who was just sensational last night, will join us as well. That's coming up during the Power Hour.
Don't forget tonight, Virginia, Mississippi State over on ESPN to see who goes into the winner's bracket at 2-0 between the Cavaliers and Bulldogs. In case you missed it, Brian O'Connor was with us yesterday. And we started off by talking about the emotions of Sunday's shutout win against Tennessee.
Yeah, it was a special Father's Day for sure. You know, for me, my father was in the stands. All my three children are here. And then, you know, for all of our guys, you know, everybody's family's out here for this wonderful event and one of the great events in college sports. And to come away with a great convincing victory against Tennessee was excellent. Just really, really proud of our guys and the way they performed. You know, I told the team guys after this is our fifth trip to Omaha. And I'll tell you, that was the best opening day performance we have had. I mean, they handled it so calm and poised and just really went out and executed in every facet of the game. It was awesome to see.
You know, Brian, in the first hour today, I started thinking about all these things we've talked about with college baseball this year, the home runs and all the run scoring and things of that nature. And there was some, you know, talk about going to the ballpark, and as big as it was, would the ball still be flying out? And still in your game and in Elliott's game and really in the one last night with Mississippi State, it comes down to arms, doesn't it? It still comes back to guys throwing strikes and learning how to handle traffic on the bases. And I thought Andrew Abbott was sensational for you yesterday, not as much in striking guys out, where he did what hadn't been done by an ACC player in the World Series since, you know, Brad Rigby in 1994 for Georgia Tech. But I thought with runners on yesterday, he and your defense were superb.
Well, you're exactly right. You have to have the elite arms here in Omaha to win, because everybody is so extremely talented. So you got to throw strikes. It's got to be really good stuff, which Abbott had and Wyatt had at the end of the game. And then it comes down to great defense. You know, some of the plays we made up the middle, a couple of the plays that Nick Kent made, you know, the double play that he flipped to Cody A, the ground ball up the middle to end the inning, just one after another. And then Abbott's ability to take his game to an elite level when the pressure's on. I mean, the first inning, first and third, no outs, and for him to be able to pitch out of it and was just great. And that's what big time guys do when they do it on this kind of stage.
How much of it has stayed the same in terms of your preparation? And now that you're out there, how important is it to kind of have that routine together for like today, an off day, and go through a workout and do all those type things, but yet kind of keep the momentum, keep the confidence going with your ball club?
Well, routine's important. It is for throughout the whole year. But we've been on a very, very consistent routine really since the ACC tournament. You know, up fairly early in the morning, team breakfast. If it's not a game, it's a workout, you know, and trying to keep them on a consistent schedule. That gets challenged here in Omaha because there's just so much going on. Everybody's family's in town. They're pulled different ways. But, you know, I spent a lot of time educating our guys before coming out here and while we're here about how they can manage expectations in this event from their families and their friends, that there'll be time to spend with them. So everybody gets to enjoy the moment. But it's about us winning a championship and putting ourselves in the best position. So trying to teach them the pockets of time to take care of their loved ones, but then when do they need to be focused and ready to roll for this team.
How many times did you have to make the trip before you felt like you understood that? And now, 6 years after winning the thing, do you have to kind of have some other guys communicate the importance and value of that to this particular team? Or is it good enough if the coach with 750 wins and a ring stands up there and says it?
Well, it's great if everybody says it. Unfortunately, I've got a couple of staff members and Kevin McMullen and Matt Kirby, two of my assistants that, you know, Kevin's been with me for 18 years and Matt's been with me for 10. So they help reinforce that. They've been along that journey as well. But I'll tell you, you know, learning first as an assistant coach when I was at Notre Dame and we came to Omaha played in the World Series, that was a good learn. And then really our first time out here in 2009, it was a little bit overwhelming for me personally, just having all the family here and manage it and help trying to manage it for the kids. And so after those two times, I then just talking to other people and learning, I started to get a real good grasp of, how do you manage the event? How do you manage keeping the players focused when they need to be focused? Because there's a lot of distractions, a lot of great distractions. You know, you walk out of this hotel at the Hilton here, we're right across from the stadium, and there's all these vendors, there's all this fun, there's all these people everywhere, every day and night. And so it's important they find the pockets to enjoy it, but then we got to be ready to roll when it's time to work.
Coach, what's it like rolling out of bed, though, and finally realizing, hey, we're not in an elimination game scenario? I mean, it seems like you guys have been living on edge for a couple of weeks. You probably rolled out of bed and can't believe you're not in Columbia, South Carolina, as one, but now you're not even in an elimination game. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better case scenario.
Oh, finally. Finally, dude. Like, really? I was having dinner with my family last night, and I was thinking that same thing, that, geez, you know, here we are after a game, we're having dinner, and we're not facing elimination. I'll tell you what, it feels good. You can just breathe a little bit and say, hey, we have a little bit of wiggle room. But, you know, this team, y'all have followed it and y'all have covered it. Their resiliency and the fight that they have them when their back's against the wall is impressive. And, you know, we're in a position now that, you know, you got to win the next one. You win the next one, you go 2-0, you get a chance to work out and sit for a couple of days, and you don't play again until Friday. And so it's big one tomorrow night. Mississippi State's loaded up. They're really, really good. They've been to Omaha three times. So, you know, we're gonna push everything to the middle of the table tomorrow night to do everything we can to win that game, to hopefully stay in that winner's bracket. If not, you know, if it doesn't happen, then you guys know the toughness this team has, and they'll bounce back for sure.
You know, what you said last week, late, all eight teams are really good, right?
Really
Nobody
good.
Bad makes it to this stage. The interesting part about the Stanford-Arizona game yesterday, where Stanford ran off, I mean, what did it end up being, 10-4 or something like that, 12-4 final, something like
14-5 with 20 hits.
Ooh. The wobbling that occurs in these losers bracket games today, the winner, like yesterday was Stanford, and whoever wins this Tennessee game today, those teams right there build their own momentum again. Tennessee, Texas. Somebody will build their own momentum by winning, right? So the loser of the game, Vanderbilt last night, whoever loses Virginia, Mississippi State tonight, then has to turn around being so disappointed against a team with momentum. That's why we were talking about Clemson, South Carolina a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago, 20-some years ago in the College World Series together. That's why those teams that lose game one and then bounce back and win game two sometimes can catapult themselves back into contention. Doesn't happen often, but when it does, you can sense it. That's why Brian O'Connor finished that interview by talking about, hey, look, really big game against Mississippi State. It's enormous what NC State did last night. The opportunity for Virginia tonight is enormous. 2-0 in Omaha is the secret sauce to oftentimes finding your way to the championship.
Well, I think we pointed out last hour that 25 of the past 30 winners of the College World Series started 2-0. And you don't want to make too big a deal out of a single game, especially one that's not a championship game. But
sure.
Brian O'Connor hit it right on the money in our interview. Tonight's game is a really big deal. And to be able to say, like Elliot Avent's getting out of bed this morning and realizes, hey, I got two or three days. I get everybody rested. My team's playing with supreme confidence. And here's the best thing. We don't have to put ourselves out there in a loser-leave-town match because, you know what, Vanderbilt, as terrific as they are, defending national champs, great pitching, they now have to go beat a Stanford team that NC State made look really ordinary, and they're not. Yesterday, they proved it. They beat the number five Nationals team in the country 14-5. They had 20 hits, and they showed you yesterday what they did down in Lubbock, Texas, when they dominated Texas Tech, and that does not happen. Stanford's dangerous. So Vanderbilt's got to put up with that while NC State chills and grills and says, hey, we've beaten both of you. We'll catch you Friday, whoever shows up. So it is a big deal to be 2-0. And Virginia has been down this road before. They won the national championship in 2015. They understand how it works. So this is a biggie tonight now. And listen, when you're looking for something to do tonight, grab your popcorn, put your feet up, 7 p.m., good to go, and we'll see what happens. And we could be sitting here tomorrow with the ACC really in a catbird position with both NC State and Virginia not playing for another couple days while everybody else tries to figure it out. And that is exactly where you want to be this week in Omaha.
Boy, and this is why this part of it right here, the first 2 days are always great, but these couple days right along in here are what makes this such a super event.
And
really does.
And keep in mind, this afternoon at 2 o'clock, the number 2 national seed, Texas, the number 3 national seed, Tennessee, great teams. These are great teams. Somebody's going to be 2 in barbecue. Somebody is leaving before you see the first pitch tonight that walked in here 6 days ago going, guess what? We're the number 2 or number 3 national team. We're going to win this thing. How about not winning a game?
Yep.
And neither one of them did much in game 1. Texas scored 1 run, lost. Tennessee shut out by Virginia. So you're talking about some pressure this afternoon. Burnt orange and big orange. Somebody's going home.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big deal. So, again, Omaha never disappoints. It is a great, great tournament.
Nope. Brian O'Connor is just the latest Virginia coach to experience some success, right? Taking his team to the College World Series, you start looking at Lars Tiffany and all the things that have gone on in lacrosse. And when we come back on the other side, we'll show you some of this Virginia coaching success that Carla Williams ought to be having a second cup of coffee about this morning. Don't forget, after this show right here finishes a week from Friday, July the 2nd, the school takeovers begin right here on ACC Network. Yep. Leading up to the week of the ACC kickoff, every school gets a day right here on ACC Network. Next week, we'll give you the lineup. How about that? We'll give you the rotation. You can pick out your favorite school. Follow that day, you can pick out the school you hate and, you know, grimace all over their successes too if you really want to. We'll show it all to you. School takeovers begin July 2nd right here on ACC Network, streaming live, of course, on the ESPN app. So think about Charlottesville, Lars Tiffany, Tony Bennett, Brian O'Connor, Bronco Mendenhall, and the football success. Amazing run. We'll talk about it after this on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. We got Virginia on the brain. They go tonight against Mississippi State. Should be another great one in Omaha. And I tell you what, Wes, the amount of success that the Hoos have had here in multiple sports, you know, I say it all the time, it starts at the top. And you look at the leadership from a coaching position standpoint at UVA. Yeah. Carla Williams and company look back and go, hey, you know what? We are in really, really good hands.
Yeah, I mean, take the current example, right? What Brian O'Connor has done, 750 wins. He's led the Hoos to all 5 College World Series appearances in program history. 750th win came Sunday in the shutout of Tennessee. We mentioned this yesterday following our visit with Coach. There was a time where in the late 90s, after Seth Greisinger led Virginia to an ACC championship, that the university was thinking about de-emphasizing baseball. And, you know, Pac, you visited with John Grisham. He was as responsible for kind of fueling the economy to kind of keep that program going, right, facility-wise and so forth. And now they've got one of the top facilities, footprints, physical plants in college baseball, and O'Connor's got an 18-year worksheet to show you just how successful he can be. 5 appearances in Omaha, 15 NCAA tournaments, and a title.
I was going to say that one national title, he's hoping this time next week, maybe it's 2. But it just goes to show you the great job he has done. And again, Virginia keeps on grinding, right? Much like NC State, slow start, and now all of a sudden they are smoking hot. But it's more than just baseball, Wes. I think the one thing you think about for Virginia, I think immediately of what Tony Bennett's done from a men's basketball perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. 12 years with Tony Bennett, and now you're talking about where Virginia basketball is going to be, you know, consistently in the nation's top 25. national championship, 5 ACC regular season titles. You know, that goes back to Ralph Sampson didn't get 5 of them. I mean, Terry Holland, I'm not sure, got 5 of them. And quite frankly, post-Terry Holland, Jeff Jones did a really nice job at Virginia. But there were some dark hours following the dismissal of Jeff Jones back. You know that, before they got Tony Bennett to arrive.
And Tony should appreciate the photo that we're using today, because I think that was when he was just hired at the University of Virginia. But the point of it is he has turned Virginia into a new blood. And if you don't think that they're not on elite status, you don't know what you're talking about. Speaking of elite, over my shoulder, you see bookends of lacrosse championships. You see right there, 2019, right there, over my head, 21. That's a Lars Tiffany special. Everybody signed it, and they've got hardware. And, boy, what a job Lars has done in Charlottesville.
I'd say so. And remember now, this was a program that already had great success. So the foundation and all the pillars of it were there. And you see his numbers in 5 years and now 2 titles? I mean, this is hard to guard stuff, Pac. He's won 71% of his games. I mean, holy smokes.
Yeah, those numbers don't lie either. And that one on the very bottom, that's the cool one. National titles.
Yeah.
Dos. And if you think it's going to stay at 2, you're crazy. They'll be in the hunt to win more down the road under Lars Tiffany's leadership at the University of Virginia. Plus, he's got a bobblehead right here. Got the bobblehead. It's just like me back in 2004.
Stop.
Seriously, look at the picture on the screen. Look at the picture that our
hold
graphic.
Hold the bobblehead up near the screen. Hold the bobblehead right above
beside
Lars
it.
Tiffany.
You can't miss it. It's right there beside it.
It looks good. Looks good for you. Look at that. Yeah, look at that right there, huh? Oh, yeah, right there. That's it. Yeah, that's Lars Tiffany. That's
it's
not
Lars
Mark
Tiffany.
Packer.
It's not me. It's Lars.
It's a Lars Tiffany bobblehead. Yeah, from here on out, that's Lars Tiffany. Okay. If you were buying early, your investment has paid off, and it's going to pay more. Because I think when Tony Bennett arrived from Washington State, it was one sign of what Virginia could do. When Bronco Mendenhall came from BYU, right? I mean, basically moved from his part of the country all the way to the East to take over a Power 5 program. They've been bowl eligible in 4 of 5 years. He won the Coastal Division a couple of years ago. And Pac, they're producing consistent football. And good for him. And I think this is something Virginia, you know, the best may be yet to come, but you look at his era and then the previous 5, and you really start to see some things about what Bronco Mendenhall could potentially ultimately do in his next 5 here at Virginia.
Well, it's a matter of building a foundation, and that takes time. I know people want to win yesterday. It just doesn't work that way normally. And I think Bronco understood what he was walking into at Virginia as far as the academic standpoint. They're not cutting any corners. Mm-hmm. And you want to build it the right way. And I think that's what Bronco has been able to do so far at the University of Virginia. Have they reached the finish line? No, they haven't. He'd be the first one to tell you. But I think he has established exactly what his program needs to look like in Charlottesville. And, oh, by the way, you mentioned the whole BYU thing when we had Bronco on the show last time. They've got that little road trip with BYU this year, which may be one of the most interesting non-conference games of note in the league this year. But he's done a really, really nice job.
There you go. So, quick look at the good work that's happened at Virginia. And like I said, Carla Williams, just get you that second cup of coffee this morning, because it's all pretty good. And we didn't even get into things like what their swimming and diving program that's been great. The
national champs.
Rowing and so forth. Yeah, I mean, they've done a phenomenal job there, too. More to come. We go back to Omaha to start the Power Hour. It's been a while since we've had Kelsey Riggs on this program, isn't it, Pac? I mean, it's been a while. Am I right or wrong on that?
You'd be wrong. While you were, hanging out with the oil magnates, she was actually working.
Oh,
she
that's
was co-hosting.
Right.
So, yeah, she's been on recently, actually.
That's it. Yeah, okay, so she did co-host. That's right. And in between her vacations. And now she's at one of the tropical spots of American sports, Omaha, Nebraska. When we come back, Kelsey Riggs joins us from Omaha. We'll talk about the Wolfpack last night, what we expect tonight from the Cavaliers as they tangle with Mississippi State right after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.